The Reader's Choice Treasury is a collection of short stories compiled by the readers and editors of Together Magazine, Doubleday and Company, Inc., Garden City, New York, 1964. The short stories included in this anthology first appeared in the popular Reader's Choice section of Together, a Methodist-sponsored family magazine, when its editors invited older readers to send in stories they remembered from their youth. The Red Wagon by Leon Ware. Janice long loved her job working at the Sunset Valley School for Children with Special Needs. She marveled at their appreciation for all that was done for them, as well as the almost complete lack on their part of any feeling of being ill-used by fate. Not all aspects of Janice's work, however, were as delightful as her interactions with the children. On the school's governing board were some of the city's staunchest citizens, stalwarts who often disagreed with her on policy decisions. Fortunately, Janice had one ally on the board, a housewife who usually backed her in the tussles with the board, most of which were about money and the sensible use of it. At today's meeting, though, Janice was certain there wouldn't be any squabble. A local philanthropist had given the school a check to buy a brand new station wagon for field trips. When the children heard about the check, they had shouted and clapped and laughed in their delight. And when Janice asked them to select a color for the station wagon, they had called out in unison, "Red!" One of the boys then wondered, "Please, Miss Long, will it have our name on it?" "In gold," answered Janice. But when Janice came before the board to obtain their blessing, the okay was snagged on the objections of Mason Arnold, an auto agency owner. "It was rather ridiculous under the circumstances," Arnold said, "to insist on a red car, especially when they could save money buying a brand new last year's model from his dealership, a car that happened to be green." When Janice protested, Arnold shot back, "What difference does the color make?" Buying a red car, the teacher insisted, was a matter of keeping faith with the children. Finally, the housewife stepped into the discussion. "The color is a little thing to us, perhaps," she explained. "But I was never more sure of Miss Long's excellence in this position than I am right now. You have to keep faith with the children, Mr. Arnold." Moved by her words, the board decided that Janice should go immediately to pick up the red station wagon, bring it back to school, and beep the horn to summon the children as she drove into the parking lot. When Janice returned, according to plan, and honked the horn, the children came hurrying out of the school almost before the echo had subsided. As they gathered around the bright new car, tow-headed Whitney explored the lettering on the front door with his fingers. "Our name's here," he cried. Then Miss Long invited a little girl named Peg to step forward. Grasping Peg's soft, tiny fingers, Miss Long ran them along the slightly raised lettering and read the words aloud. "Sunset Valley School for the Blind." The tiny girl's dark blank eyes opened wide with delight. "And is it red, Miss Long?" she asked. Before Janice could answer, however, Whitney, his sensitive fingers still moving over the sleek front fender, answered for her. "Of course it's red, Peggy. Isn't that what we ordered?" "Oh, please," Janice whispered, catching her breath and biting her lip. "Let everyone keep faith with them, always." The Last Leaf by O. Henry. Among the many artists who scoured the streets for lodging in Greenwich Village's low-rent 18th-century attics were a pair of adventurous young women who went by the names of Sue and Johnsy. At last, they set up a studio together on the top floor of a squatty three-story brick building. That was in May. In November, a cold, unseen stranger called Pneumonia stalked about the colony, touching one here and there with his icy fingers, and Johnsy, a native Californian unaccustomed to the harsh New York weather, was touched to the very bone. Gravely ill, she lay scarcely moving on her painted iron bedstead, looking through the small Dutch window panes at the blank side of the next brick house. Sudie, who had grown up in the cold climes of Maine, became distraught when the doctor informed her that Johnsy had only one chance in, let's say, 10, of surviving through the winter. He was most concerned because Jonesy seemed to have lost her will to live. If you will get her to ask one question about the new winter styles in cloak sleeves, he continued more optimistically, I will promise you a 1 in 5 chance for her. As soon as the doctor left, Sue burst into tears. After composing herself, she swaggered into Jonesy's room and sat down next to the bed. Jonesy lay silent, her face turned toward the window, and Sue decided that her friend must be asleep. But soon she became aware of an intermittent murmur. 12, said Jonesy faintly. And a few minutes later, 11. With her eyes wide open, staring out the window, Jonesy was counting backwards. What is it, dear? Sue inquired, unable to see what had caught Jonesy's attention outside the window. Indeed, there was only a bare, dreary yard to be seen, and the blank side of the brick house 20 feet away. An old, old ivy vine, gnarled and decayed at the roots, climbed halfway up the brick wall. Jonesy had counted down to 5 before she finally answered. Leaves, she whispered, on the ivy vine. When the last one falls, I must go too. Don't be a goosey, Sue chided. Why, the doctor told me this morning that your chances for getting well real soon... Let's see, he said the chances were 10 to 1. Jonesy, however, seemed not to hear. I want to see the last one fall before it gets dark, she said dreamily. I want to turn loose my hold on everything and go sailing down, down. Just like one of those poor, tired leaves. Try to sleep, soothed Sue softly. Don't try to move till I come back. Then she dashed downstairs to the studio of the girl's self-appointed protector, a fierce-tongued old emigre named Behrman, who earned a sparse living as a fill-in model while drowning his own endless plans to paint a masterpiece in bottle after bottle of gin. Is there people in the world mit their foolishness to die because leaves they drop off from a confounded vine? Behrman grumbled as he clambered upstairs behind Sue. But once in the apartment, both Sue and Behrman fell silent. Together they stared despondently at the ivy vine outside the window, where a cold rain was falling, mingled with snow. Jonesy slept through the night. When she awoke the next morning, she asked Sue to draw back the green shade. Pull it up. I want to see, she whispered. Sue obeyed, but lo, after the beating rain and fierce gusts of wind, there yet stood out against the brick wall one ivy leaf, its serrated edges tinted with the yellow of dissolution and decay. It hung bravely from a branch some 20 feet from the ground. It is the last one, said Jonesy. It will fall today, and I shall die at the same time. But as the day passed into another stormy night, the lone ivy leaf still clung to its stem against the wall. And when dawn again awakened the young women, the leaf was still there. Jonesy gazed at it for a long time. I've been a bad girl, Sudie, she said finally. Something has made that last leaf stay there to show me how wicked I was. It is a sin to want to die. The following afternoon, Sue came to Jonesy's bed, put an arm around her friend, and imparted the news she had just received from the doctor. Mr. Behrman died of pneumonia today in the hospital. He had been found unconscious in his studio a day or so earlier. His shoes and clothing were wet through and icy cold. Near his side lay a lantern, still lighted, a ladder, some scattered brushes, and a palette with green and yellow colors mixed on it. Look out the window, dear, said Sue, at the last ivy leaf on the wall. Didn't you wonder why it never fluttered or moved when the wind blew? Ah, darling, it's Behrman's masterpiece. He painted it there the night the last leaf fell. 3 Days to See by Helen Keller. Blind and deaf, Helen Keller, 1880 to 1968, lived out her life in a world devoid of both sight and sound, but filled with the riches of inner vision. As a middle-aged woman in 1933, Miss Keller asked a friend what she had observed on her hour-long walk in the woods. "Nothing in particular," the friend replied. Keller was astonished. How was it possible, she asked herself, to walk for an hour through the woods and see nothing worthy of note? I, who cannot see, find hundreds of things to interest me through mere touch. Here, in her own words, are some of the magnificent woman's heartfelt reflections on the gifts of the senses and their supreme, often unawakened powers to connect us with each other and the universe. "I have imagined selecting carefully what I should most like to see if I were given the use of my eyes, say, for just a 3-day period. On the first day, I should want to see the people whose kindness and companionship have made my life worth living. I do not know what it is to see into the heart of a friend through that window of the soul, the eye. I should call to me all my dear friends and look long into their faces, imprinting upon my mind the outward evidences of the beauty that is within them. I should let my eyes rest, too, on the face of a baby. In the afternoon, I should take a long walk in the woods and intoxicate my eyes on the beauties of the world of nature, and I should pray for the glory of a colorful sunset. The next day, I should arise with the dawn and see the thrilling miracle by which night is transformed into day. This day, I should devote to a hasty glimpse of the world, past and present. I should want to see the pageant of man's progress, and so I should go to the museums. The evening of my second day, I should spend at the theater or at the movies. How I should like to see the fascinating figure of Hamlet, or the gutsy Falstaff amid colorful Elizabethan trappings. The following morning, I should again greet the dawn, anxious to discover new delights, new revelations of beauty. Today, this third day, I shall spend in the workaday world, amid the haunts of men going about the business of life. I stroll down a busy street. I throw my eyes out of focus, so that I see no particular object, but only a seething kaleidoscope of color. I make a tour of the city, to the slums, to factories, to parks where children play. Always my eyes are open wide to all the sights of both happiness and misery. At midnight, permanent night would close in on me again. Naturally, in those 3 short days, I should not have seen all I wanted to see. Only when darkness had again descended upon me should I realize how much I had left unseen.